a number of testing, I'm pretty confident that it works. Meaning that it's doing what it's supposed to do.
The results, what do we expect?
Right, the problem is that I don't have a workload for the key value store to test the cache. That's what I don't have yet. So what I did was, the AKB has a small benchmark that they use to say this is the throughput of puts, gets, and things like that. So, but in that workload, there's no repetitions. I mean, you're always getting, you're just putting a different key and getting a different key. So the cache won't do anything.
So it's completely random.
Right. So, but still I've run it with different sizes of caches to see what's the degradation that the cache will introduce. And that's what I wanted to show you.
Okay.
It's not very exciting, but that's what I have.
What about YCSB? Can you run YCSB on top of DirectKV or not yet?
I don't have the pieces that I need. When Ninja send, it is our Java bindings for the DirectKV library.
Okay.
But we still have a piece that is the module from YCSB that tells that transform the workload the YCSB generates to the library.
Yeah.
It's not very difficult to do, but we don't have that and I haven't done it.
The missing piece is
there are two things, right? YCSB is written in Java.
Yeah.
So from Java to use a C library, written in C, you have to use some bindings that Java has so you can talk to the C library.
Okay.
And of course you have to write a module in Java for YCSB to say this is how you talk to this
DirectKV,
right? So what this guy Maxim did is a Java library that is nothing but a wrapper for the DirectKV library. So that applications written in Java can use the DirectKV library.
Including YCSB.
Right. So the pieces that we're missing is the actual module for YCSB that talks to the DirectKV.
To the new Java
to this
wrapper.
Bindings, right, to the wrapper.
The Java wrapper for DirectKV.
Yes.
So YCSB needs to be modified to be able to do that.
Correct. Yes.
I see. Okay, so that we cannot run YCSB on top of DirectKV yet because we don't have all the pieces.
Right. However, I did that in the summer when I was in FusionIO because this guy Maxim, he also wrote a YCSB wrapper and a YCSB module for that wrapper that he also wrote. So we have all the pieces, and I run some experiments. So I asked Swami, could you send me those files so I don't have to write my own YCSB module? And he said, well, I'll get back to you once I have them. But he hasn't yet.
Might have to remind him.
That was like on Wednesday last week.
It's not been too long.
Right.
All right. So, okay. So yeah, it makes sense for you to just wait then to write stuff by yourself, unless it's very trivial, which I don't expect it to be.
It's not very difficult, honestly. My main problem when I've tried, because I tried to do this once, but then I find out that he wrote also that, then I ended up using what he wrote.
Yeah.
The problem is that that uses a building system that's called Maven. It's something like makefiles, but for Java applications.
Okay.
And I have no clue how to use that.
Yeah.
Because there you have to express not only the dependencies that you have to use, right? When you compile link to this library and things like that, and I don't know how to use that. And if we have to, I read the documentation and learn how to do it, but I have to learn before I do, and it will take time.
Yeah, let's not waste time on that. So the other thing to do would be to the workload that you have that you're able to run on DirectKV right now. What's it called? Is it just a micro benchmark?
Yeah, it's a micro benchmark that they With the library, they also ship a test application. It's a very simple, small test. And this benchmark. It's very straightforward. Random puts, random gets, random batch puts, random batch gets. No, there's no batch gets. Iteration and things like that. So what I did is just I extended that application so that in the configuration file I can set the cache as well. And I inserted the code for the cache in puts and gets and deletes. I don't have it for batch puts and I don't have it for the iteration yet. But just for good puts, gets, and deletes. And then I ran the benchmark with different sizes of the cache and without the cache and see what happens. And that's the numbers that I was organizing them, I haven't even looked at it. I think I even found a mistake. That's what I wanted to show you. Because I do expect a degradation because you have the overhead of the cache and you're not benefiting from it because you're not everything that you put you never get.
Yeah. Well, one thing which you could do is to generate a workload that actually uses the cache.
Yes.
And,
yes,
I
could do that as well.
One easy way to make the same workload use the cache is to reduce the size of the data set so that it would fit in the cache.
Right.
Well, ideally, if you have a random workload, you should see a need. Right, as you increase the size of the cache, it doesn't really benefit until you fit the entire working set, and then you have great performance.
And I think I'm observing that because the latency for 64 megabytes went to 0 microseconds of get. So maybe that's what's happening there.
It's possible, depending on the size of the working set.
I don't think it's too big because those keys are 512 bytes.
Okay.
And I don't remember, I think it's 10 to the 6. Operations. So
right,
10
but
to the 6.
But this what matters is the total size of the data set.
That's the size of the data set because every put is inserting a new key. So the data set in general is just the addition of all the addition of all the puts.
Okay.
You add the size of all the puts, that will be.
So you do all the puts first and then all the gets?
Yes.
So you have 10 to the 6 times 512.
Which is 10 to the 9, right?
512 megabytes. It's 512 megabytes.
So 64. No, I shouldn't. It doesn't fit then. I only have 64. I don't know. With 512 megabytes of the cache side, that. Yeah, I do run it with 512. Because what I wanted to see is that my intuition told me, okay, if it's completely random and it doesn't fit, then it's shooting. The degradation of performance that I get from the cache that is not being helpful at all should not depend on the size of the cache. So I run it
for LRU.
For LRU.
Yeah.
So that's what I was testing to verify that that is correct.
Okay.
And of course, I also verify that there's a memory leakage or anything like that. And that's what I wanted to show you, yeah.
Okay. You want to look at the numbers now?
Yeah, we can log in at Gladiator.
Okay. Well, one thing that you could do is plot the performance.
Yeah, I was going to do that, but I didn't have time.
That's fine, we can do it now. Leonardo Gladiator?
No, you can do Scilab.
Gladiator?
Yeah, and then you use the regular password.
What was that?
Super Sun. Okay, now do su el marmo. So logging as main su. Maybe you have to do as fast with su. So
really,
yeah, because that way it won't ask for my password. And enter, and now you type the super strong password. Now tmux, tmux.
Oh.
Sorry.
I shouldn't do quit, right?
Yeah, you could.
I can.
Oh, Control D is probably enter to say whatever. Control D.
Control D.
So the same with an A at the end. Tmux space A.
Here?
Space A.
Like this one? A.
Lowercase, yeah. Okay. So this is what I have so far.
So, where are we? Can I have a cube? Okay, so this is the numbers with no cache, 8 megabytes. I think these are 64, 512 megabytes.
Where is cache and where is no cache?
This is no cache.
Okay.
This is cache and megabytes, cache 64, and cache 512.
Okay, put doesn't change because of the write through. Correct?
Well, it should decrease a little bit, and we do see it here. But this is not that significant. Right, because now, besides the put, you have to do the main copy and re-entries in the cache and things like that.
Okay. And 512 megabytes is where you see the
right, the latency
performance
for get is zero.
And that's fine. So you would expect that. Right? Then you have iterator. Iterator should also see better.
That one is not using the cache yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we shouldn't see anything there. The release should also have degradation because now I have to remove the entry from the cache as well.
I see. Okay. Okay, so these numbers seem to make sense, right?
At least to me, they do.
And this is with a single-threaded...
Yes, everything is single-threaded.
Okay. Okay, this makes sense. You could, for instance, check with a couple of other points between 64 and 512 to see what happens. 128, 256.
I have those numbers too. But initially, what I was doing is that let me get the smallest one and the biggest one. And then I saw this and I said, whoa, what's going on here? So I started adding the ones in between.
Yeah.
I did powers of 8.
Okay, well, that's good. Okay, what's the next step? So we talked about two things, right? One is this is your own cache implementation.
Yes.
And the next thing to do is to pull the LevelDB cache implementation,
yes,
or as much of it as we need.
Yes.
And then we can do a comparison of no cache, this version of cache, and the LevelDB version of cache.
Right.
The LevelDB version of cache would also be write through. Would have be write through or write back?
It's a recache, yes.
LevelDB does the write back though, right?
You mean write through?
Well, LevelDB doesn't it do a write back, and it writes to memory and then batches the stuff and writes it out to disk afterwards.
Well, writes are always to memory by design. It's not even if you don't have a cache. Because
no, whether or it's independent of whether you have a cache or not.
Right,
okay.
Because the tail of the log is always in memory, and then once it goes beyond one size, then you start a new log and you write that one. And
the tail is in memory because
to improve the write performance.
No. How does LevelDB ensure that the log is in memory? If it doesn't have a cache, it's writing it to its own memory. The application level, is there an application level log?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, they implement their own log, yeah.
Okay, so the cache is just read-only. It's a read-only cache.
It's a read-only cache, yes.
But the cache, I'm assuming, is also checks in the log.
The cache also checks in the log. What does that mean?
Meaning that, let's say the application wrote some new data, overwrote an item that was in the cache.
Okay.
But now it goes to the log, right? Or does it also get updated in the cache? Well, maybe it does get updated in the cache. That's what I'm
not sure, honestly. But I think that the original copy, I mean, if you get updated to the log, then the old versions they don't get cleaned up synchronously. It's just later on when they start cleaning up. It will compact that and remove the centers.
Yeah.
But it's not synchronous deletion.
Okay. Mm. I guess my question is more about whether they update the cache. I guess it makes sense for them to update the cache while they're adding something new to the log if you don't want a stale entry in the cache, or at least invalidate the entry in the cache.
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so that's going to be a little bit of work, I'm assuming, because you are the write back logging implementation of LevelDB seems like it needs to interact with the cache at some level for correctness, and we don't have a log, and we're not doing write back. We're doing write through, so maybe it's simpler in the case of the write through cache implementation, but we have to be aware of that difference so that when we pull LevelDB code in, we compensate for it.
Right. Their design of the API is interesting because when you enable a cache,
mm-hmm.
you can decide for some operations not to use a cache. Like, for instance, if you're going to iterate a sequential of keys, then you can say, I don't want to use a cache because I don't want to pollute my cache with this sequential scan.
So what is the granularity of specification, say, for this set of keys, or that you don't use the cache?
But it's by operation. When I perform...
Oh, for put, you don't use the cache.
Oh, for gets and things like that.
Oh, okay. So all gets cannot... Well, that doesn't make any sense.
You can enable it. You say, I want to enable the cache and use this much memory for cache. But there are some operations for which I want to say, I don't want to use the cache. Don't modify my cache for the following operations.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that the example they used in particular was the iteration, because you don't want to pollute your cache with a sequential scan.
Mm-hmm. I see. For iteration.
Right.
That makes sense. And what do we do with iteration? We don't have any...
We don't
deal with iterations.
Right. But what I plan to use is that for the iterator, if possible, I think that the way they handle iteration is a little bit different because they uses this iterator depends on another iterator in the FTL that transfer data by batches and things like that. It's not one key value at a time. So I need to think more about this. But in principle, what we could do is make the iterator does consult the cache, but if there's a miss, don't update the cache after you do a read. Just leave the cache as it is.
But if the iterator converts a single operation into a batched get of a whole bunch of items, prefetching maybe,
the
FTL layer, then we need to do that at the cache layer as well. Right? No.
I don't know. Maybe it doesn't make sense for us to use the cache for the iterator. Because it doesn't bring one key at a time. They do bring a bunch of keys.
Okay. So the only operations that would benefit from this read-only cache would be the get and iterator, right? If we have a...
Yes.
If we decide to use the cache for the iterator.
Correct, yes.
Okay. So what do you want to work on next? Now that you have a cache implementation for gets, I think we can postpone the iterator if we need a caching implementation for that operation. We can postpone it until later after we get to talk to Swami and Misha.
Right.
But let's just focus on what we already agreed upon, which is pulling the LevelDB caching implementation.
Do you think I should focus on that?
Unless there is something else that we have left out from our previous discussion.
I would like to get some numbers for a real workload to see what's the benefit of the cache.
Okay, so but for that you need to wait for Swami to respond to you, isn't it?
Yes. I don't think it's worth it for me to start recreating a workload of like non-distribution to see if it makes sense or not, because that's what YCSB does.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I haven't, this version of my cache, I don't have any locking scheme. So I might have to think about that when I start using multithread. But I figure the locking scheme for the cache is very straightforward.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, if you don't, It's best if you don't log the entire cache, for instance, to add or remove an item.
I think I do have to, because...
One thing that you could do is do what the operating system does, which is have per core caches. Per CPU caches, which makes it would make lookup a little bit more complicated, but it will improve parallelism performance. These lookups will now have to, you know, iterate through all the per CPU caches to look at an item.
Right.
But when you add an item, then you just need to. You'll get to add to your list directly without. Well, the locking is at the granularity of a per CPU cache as opposed to the entire cache.
Correct, yes.
So that's one possibility, right? So if you were to add an item, you only lock your per CPU cache and you may have to replace some other item. Now you have to think about sizing of per CPU caches, which becomes a little complicated. What are the other alternatives here? Per node locks are more memory intensive.
But I don't think that will solve it because I still need to perform a. The cache is basically a hash table for fast lookup on a linked list.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to lock the linked list because after finding the hash table, I'm going to remove that element from the list and put it either at the end or the beginning. Actually, I always put it at the end, never at the beginning, because it becomes a recent one, right? So the whole thing has to be atomic.
Yeah, but you don't need to lock the entire cache. You just need to lock the items that get affected.
I need to lock the tail.
You need to lock the tail. You need to lock the item that you're removing. You need to lock the previous and next, perhaps, because you need to access their pointers or reset them. So if you have per element locks, then you could do those things, but that's a little bit too complicated. One thing which you could check, for instance, is to look at the list implementation in the kernel. I think we have a FreeBSD implementation of lists, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at whether they provide any thread safety or not.
The BSD doesn't.
The other thing that you could do is look at the C++ STL version of the...
Oh, no, those lists are useless.
Why?
I look at those and I ended up writing my own.
No, that's possible, but you can look at their multi-threading model and their solution for thread safety.
I don't think that their lists are thread safe.
They're not thread safety very well. Then we don't really benefit. What other lists could you look at?
And the linked list in the kernel, they are not thread safe either. They're very similar to what the ones on BSD.
We can probably look at some use cases for per CPU data structures in the kernel to see how they provide thread safety. They have to.
Why are you
concerned about locking the entire list?
Yeah.
Well, that's because then you are serializing every thread, linked list caching lookup, adding operations. Right. So let's say if you have 32 cores, 31 cores are going to be waiting on one core to do its
I was thinking about using a rewrite lock to start with.
Okay.
Then if I see a substantial contention in my locking scheme, then I'll move to something more sophisticated.
No, read write lock makes sense. At the very least, we should do that if you're locking the entire list.
Yes.
Okay, let's start with that. I agree that we should start with the simplest version. And if we see a lot of contention on the lock, then we can think about something more fancy. Okay, so well, thread safety is one thing you need to work on, and then pulling the LevelDB cache, right?
Right.
Code. Okay. What else? Yeah, I think those two items are good enough for now, because I think the LevelDB caching implementation or porting it to DirectKV is not going to be trivial or as straightforward. So it's going to take you some time.
And I it will require a good amount of modifications. Because the slide thing, also the way I'm indexing elements in my cache. Like elements in DirectKV are not described just by the key, but also by their pool ID. So in my case, I'm indexing and using those both elements. So the key in my hash table is a hash of those two elements. So in LevelDB, they use their own hash table, which means they also use their own hash function. So I need to think very carefully how to use the hash function to hash these two values in a way that makes sense to not have a lot of collisions.
Well, I would say don't change any of that. Your first step should not be optimization. Your first step should be just porting as is all the functionality.
Hmm.
And then we could think about optimization later on.
Okay. That makes sense.
So even if you think that it's... Because it's important to have like a vanilla version of LevelDB cache so that we have a reasonable comparison of everything besides the cache, at least for some workloads.
Okay, so I am going to make this more presentable so I can share with everybody. I'm going to finally start reading more carefully the LevelDB caching code and think more carefully about the locking scheme. In my cache, I also am keeping some metadata about statistics.
Yeah.
And I'm planning, I think I added there already, a counter of updates, meaning that when I insert an element in the cache that's already there, I'm keeping track of how many, I call that an update operation.
Yeah, it's a write hit.
Right, it's a write hit.
Mm.
So that will give us an idea for this workload generated for YCSB, whether it makes sense or not to have the write, to cache the writes as well.
Mm-hmm.
If a significant percentage of the writes are updates, then it would probably make sense, right? Because we would absorb
even
those.
Even if not, they're delaying the write. Are you talking about a write back caching versus write to me?
Yeah, I guess. We said that we should stay away from that for now, right? Because it's complicated.
Yeah, I think this first step we are doing a read only cache, and I think I don't know if I'm not mistaken. There was one of the emails from Nisha. She talked about someone implementing a cache for DirectKV as well. Somebody else, right? And
I also remember she mentioning someone implementing a version of DirectKV for file system.
This was in one of the recent emails she sent out. So Java binding. This one. This one, it's not initiable, print or what?
Yeah, I think that's us.
Hmm?
I don't know why I think that that's awesome. He doesn't know it.
Oh, okay. I see. Alright, so that's fine. Well, we can ask Nisha if that's us or not. If someone else is already implementing a cache, then we should not be spending too much time doing the same thing. Java bindings. Okay, so Java bindings for what?
Yeah, that's what we have.
We already have that.
Yeah, that's what Maxine developed.
Okay. Alright, so it seems like you already know what's going on. Okay, so let's. I think we have a good plan.